Jesus liberates, right? Jesus puts everything on the line and something at risk. And so for me, doing the kind of ministry that allows me to show up with the most vulnerable, but also questioning empire around why in a place that we got everything we need and some, and we got enough money to fund war, that we can't fund education and food. Right? Interrogating the systems that make
Right.
folks the most vulnerable. Right. We want to live out Matthew 25, but I'm trying to figure out why in the world are there people who don't have clothes and food and continue to be unfairly in prison? Like, so for me, right, like I'm not just gonna love like Jesus loved, I'm gonna liberate like Jesus did.
This is almost like a under the umbrella of Black South. This conversation with Reverend Dr. Cassandra Gould is honestly a privilege. I like to tell people whenever I talk about Black South that there would be no Black South without Reverend Dr. Cassandra Gould because of her mentorship and her training. It was because of her that we were introduced to the term of reverse migration. It's because of her that we had vision for what community development and community organizing could look like in a Black community. And so we are delighted that she would even say yes to being on our board. And I'm even more delighted to have a conversation with you. So thank you so much for being here.
Man, don't make me cry online. I'm really humbled, Aaron, just even for the opportunity. I know that our connection was a God-ordained connection in a space that I wrestled with. Should I even be going? But so I'm really grateful. And I said this on one of your posts last week. If I had a client of the year, you would definitely be a coaching client of the year, just because of not just because you like follow the coach's directions, but you take the work of your heart and your head, the God-centered work, right? The work that Dr. Katie Geneva Cannon would say, the work that your soul requires, you take it to heart. And so all of the ways in which you have followed up on just those little spiritual nudges that you had, it's just amazing, and I'm here for it. So thank you for such a gracious introduction.
Of course, of course. And I would love for you to, in whatever way you'd like to, talk a little bit about your life. You know, like you're doing some major things. You're a mover and a shaker in the organizing world and the development world. You're always in Africa, I feel like you're doing all the things. And so I just would love to just hear you talk about the journey of your life and how you've come to
Oh,
this point.
yeah. Wow. So there is, I don't know if you've ever participated in like a training that used this exercise called I'm From, where you kind of write really almost a poem. And so I hope it's like just because I've been sitting with this like all day and really for the last 48 hours. So can I share it in this way?
Absolutely.
Okay. So I'm from, well, I don't know exactly where I'm from, but I believe it was Africa, probably the West Coast, Ghana. After all, isn't that the cradle of civilization? I'm from the red clay dirt. Again, I believe of Ghana. And more specifically, of Demopolis, Alabama, 49 miles west of Selma. I'm from Grandma Joanna, whom I didn't know, who was born almost on the cusp of enslavement being outlawed. I'm from Grandma Frances. I'm from Big Mama, who I did know, who taught me to be all that I am. I'm from Grandma Thelma, who sadly died after childbirth from delivering my beloved mama, Carrie Thelma. I'm from Love and a Long Line of Women Who Changed the Game. I learned from women who were taken advantage of, Grandma Joanna particularly, by one of Massa's sons, but changed the game and somehow got the land. I learned that the worst thing is never the last thing. I learned to sit my behind down because I was doing too much. I learned to snap peas and bake biscuits and sweet potato pies. I learned, and I'm from pound cakes and homemade ice cream in the hot sun of Alabama. I'm from a family who work not just their bodies, but their minds. I'm from a generation where folk were told they had to be twice as good, work twice as hard, and that hard work always paid off. That's what I learned in Alabama, where I'm from in my hometown. Fast forward, moving to St. Louis when I was probably 6 or 7 years old. And I was like, where in the whole wide non-Black world did y'all bring me? Not that there
Yeah.
weren't a lot of Black folk around, but I missed the safety, right, of this Black bubble in the Black South, where
Yeah.
we had everything that we needed and some, and were able to provide it to others, right? I found myself as a Black woman, a little Black girl who was filled with possibility and curiosity, entering spaces that were not prepared for me.
Yeah.
But gratefully that I felt like my ancestors and my parents helped to prepare me for those spaces. I didn't come to a professional, somebody gonna pay you to organize until the last 8, 9 years. But I came from people who were organizing, who were building schools, who were sitting on at lunch counters and et cetera. So all of those things have just kind of shaped who I am. I was a teenage mother. And every day I'm reminded that my children and I defy every statistic that ever was.
Yes.
So whatever you see now, it is not just the experiences that I've had, but it is the shaping, even from beyond the veil from the ancestors, the stories that have been posited into my soul in so many ways. And I just try to show up every day just to make the world a different place.
That's beautiful. There is this theme I feel like that you carry in your presence, in your voice, even in your content of being a pastor in the public square. Can you talk about why pastor in the public square? What does that mean?
Oh wow, I don't know if we got that much time, but I come to ministry late, right? There are ways in which I just feel like, I was, some would say a late bloomer in multiple ways. That's because I was spending a lot of time arguing with God. But faith has always been a part of, I'm from folk of faith, right? Like I'm from Friendship Missionary Baptist Church on Route 80.
Right.
Right? I'm from the mourner's bench, right? Where you are sitting and waiting for God to come and to hear from God. So faith has always been a part of who I am. Faith is like how I'm anchored. What I saw, not just in Demopolis, but in St. Louis from my parents who were always opening the door, it was all, somebody's house burned down, come live with us, right? All the things, right? Oh, wait, you got put out. Here we are. Was the ministry of presence. My family in Alabama, like I said, there was land. So we had food and, we had commerce, we had stores and et cetera. And I can remember being a little girl and being in a store, and I counted really well early, and there was always the book where people got stuff on credit, right? Because we were like, you got to show up for folk, and you got to show up for people in vulnerable situations. And so even coming into ministry after age 40, I bring what the ancestors, right, and parents gave me around what it means to show up. So I do ministry in a context that is not contained by four walls. I tell people I kind of, I like buildings. I actually built a building. There's a beautiful edifice in Jefferson City, Missouri, where I pastored for 9 years, that at least 10 years ago was state of the art, right? That my name is on that cornerstone. And yet I realized probably about 5 years ago, AME, African Methodist Episcopal, it's a hierarchical form of religion and itinerant. So we are sent. And I did what people don't do. I said, no, I can't go. Not because I couldn't go, but because God was like, that's not exactly where I'm calling you, right? I did my DMed in, I finished in 2013, I think 2012. My project was Beyond the Walls because I have always understood that my call was beyond the four walls of a congregation, that my call was wherever the most vulnerable people of God were. And so this pastor in the public square, I've had a number of times in my life where I was called to the public square. The many stick out, but I think I was, I living in St. Louis, 5 miles from Ferguson, and being in Ferguson so many nights, that certainly shaped me. But the aftermath of the Buffalo Massacre, with 10 dead Black folk who just went shopping on Saturday, being there for 2 weeks, sojourning still with a couple of those families, and like 7 of those 10 funerals, like physically being present. And someone said, well, don't they have pastors? Well, they might, I don't know, but they asked me to be here, right? And so how the ministry of presence matters, right? And you just never know. My beloved sister, Reverend Tracy Blackman, she always talks about just that yes, that has no boundaries. Like, yes, God, what do you need me to do, God? Yes, God. And not, and for me, not confusing a yes to God with a yes to humanity, right? So it's not that I never say no, but it's how your yes to the larger purpose that you have opens doors and beckons you, right? And gives you, opportunities that you didn't imagine. This past weekend I officiated the US Memorial of an African President. Like I can't, like, there was nothing, right? There are not enough like followers on IG to create that. All the things that we kind of, like, let me get my algorithm right? Like all of that, none of that, right? It wasn't enough likes on a video. It was just this yes that God continues to affirm that this call to the public square, this way in which I have not just envisioned but embodied ministry, that I really was hearing from God. So and I never know what, where, what, and what it means, and et cetera. But I'm just like, God, I'm listening.
That's good. I feel like maybe you've, in your last answer just now, you may have touched on this, But there is a question from Kendall because he couldn't join us. And so
Okay.
he has a question. He's doing some research for his own PhD work, ongoing PhD research work. And so his question is, within your vocation, how are you a missional witness of God, Jesus, and the kingdom with your context?
Yeah, and so saying no to a church assignment, right? And when I finally said yes to God as a pastor, I never actually imagined not pastoring, right? I was like, oh, okay. We got mandatory retirement at 75. I don't plan to be there that long, but I have a pastor's heart, right? Being engaged through my work with faith leadership strategies and being able to engage with faith leaders across this country on a national and local level, and not just faith leaders, like there's still the ordinary folk organizing folk in Ghana, folk in Rwanda, and et cetera. There's still those opportunities that it is a part of my like missional purpose, right? And I, as of lately, because of the work that I do, it's in a multi-faith context. I'm reminded as a Christian, unapologetically Christian, right? I'm reminded as a Christian pastor, Jesus is like, I got other sheep, right? And I don't believe that my call is to necessarily go and to follow this colonial model of trying to, proselytize folk, right? But my call is to be in deep relationship with those other sheep. My call is to how do I let not just the love of Jesus, the love of Jesus matters, but I think the love of Jesus makes us more comfortable than the revolutionary acts of Jesus. Because I can get more with a Jesus, who's like, oh, God is love. Okay. Meanwhile, too many Black kids are dying in, our urban cores, and there are over 27,000 dead Palestinians in Gaza, and many of them are children. We got to do more than have just love with Jesus, right? Jesus liberates, right? Jesus puts everything on the line and something at risk. And so for me, doing the kind of ministry that allows me to show up with the most vulnerable, but also questioning empire around why in a place that we got everything we need and some, and we got enough money to fund war, that we can't fund education and food. Right? Interrogating the systems that make folks the most vulnerable, right? We want to live out Matthew 25, but I'm trying to figure out why in the world are there people who don't have clothes and food and continue to be unfairly imprisoned? So for me, right, I'm not just gonna love like Jesus loved, I'm gonna liberate like Jesus did. So I hope that helps to answer Kendall's question. And doing this work allows me to do that. It allows to show up, yes, when there are crises in Buffalo, but also to show up and not just speak truth to power in state capitals, but also speak truth to power in church houses.
If I could run a shot, I would run a shot. That's how I feel right now. Because I have like I don't even have the clarified language yet for this particular next question, but I have some thoughts that I would love for you to speak into. The question I did write down is, what do you envision in the future for community developers and community organizers? Some thoughts around that question is I've heard it said that community developers and community organizers have two different theories of change, which you just named. Developers are focused on there's babies in the river, they're pulling them out, they're developing them, they're resourcing them so that they would grow up and become the leaders of their own community. They're caring for the people right there, then and there on the ground. Community organizers are more interested in going upstream to fix the systems that are putting the babies in the river. In my mind, Kit Danley was the one that she's the founder of Neighborhood Ministries here in Phoenix. She was the first one to explain that analogy to us. She also said in the same breath that because there's two different theories of change, sometimes developers and organizers butt heads in their great social change. With that being said, in my mind, I'm like, but you can't, in my mind, developers can't get far without organizers, and organizers can't get far without developers. So, can you speak to just what you envision in the future for community development and community organizing, even maybe even more specifically in the Black African American context with your desire to build? Like I've heard you name that too. I know that's a lot, but you can just speak however you want to speak.
And I think, and thank you for like sharing that analogy. I think an additional component to that community development is just charity in general, right? Direct services and charity, which is not always community development, right? One of the things that I've been really clear about is, so Matthew 25. Charity is necessary, but it's only necessary because of unjust systems, right?
Right.
Now, and sometimes because of disaster and et cetera, right? But even when there are disasters, the unjust systems are in charge of the distribution of the help.
Right.
It, so we need folk who are going to have the food bank and make sure. If I'm hungry, feed me. If I'm hungry, I don't want to hear about a policy or something happening in Congress. I need some food. Like people need, you know, it's Maslow's hierarchy. It is the materialization of liberty. Like and people need that to materialize on their tables, right? Because I can't feed my children your theory of change. So I need the materialization of hope, of faith on my table, right? I need materialization of that in my car in the morning or enough money in my account to get a bus pass so I can get to where I'm going, right? And so it takes a both and. I think that we have a great opportunity, and we saw this in 2020. You know, I was running a Faith in Action Federation in Missouri in 2020, and I saw this with Faith in Action and across the board with people who were engaged in organizing, but then there was a little overlap, like, okay, folk gonna need a few direct services, right? Like we were sending grocery gift cards because of a generous grant that we got. We were sending grocery gift cards to folk, right? It is the mama bailout, right? It's all of that. Like people need the materialization of faith and hope and liberation. And simultaneously, we were even virtually holding meetings with mayors and with governors around the distribution. The at that point, the inequitable distribution, but the distribution even of COVID tests, right? Like, so Black folk dying, but the test over here where the Black folk can't get to, right? And so it has to be some cross conversation, and we got to like have more solidarity, multi-faith solidarity, maybe some multiracial solidarity. We trying, but we need y'all to show up a little better for us. And we need to actually start to think beyond the crisis, right? And so, charity versus justice, not development versus organizing, but development philanthropy and organizing, you know, the charitable part of that as well. And I think the other thing is having organizers, and I say this all the time, like, you know, we're a part of this ecosystem where people were informed by the Alinsky style of organizing. Well, Black folk been organizing longer than Saul Alinsky,
Right.
right? And so how do we even glean from a system that actually wasn't designed from us, translate it so that it actually makes sense to folk and that we can materialize some things that they need, as well as not confront the systems for the people, but it ha actually help people to understand power so that they are able to start to even the power playing field, that they can actually, you know, wield their own power. And so I think we got to be able to, and Black folk in particular, we've been walking and chewing bubblegum a long time, right? Because we live multi-issue lives. We got multiple things coming against us. And so we've actually always for real been able to do both and, right? We were feeding the people and sitting at the food counter so that they can go eat at Woolworths or wherever anyway, right? So it's always been this both and model that I think we have a cultural responsibility to maintain that, as well as an opportunity where we have time to help people who might be culturally incompetent, no fault of their own, right? Just part of a different culture. And I think the final thing around that, or something else you said, is the building part.
Yes.
You know, I was posting last year, I was like, I ain't gonna study war no more. You know, referencing the song from the ancestors. We have been fighting for so long. 21, maybe I was doing a set of interviews with, for sake of research, with faith leaders, Dr. Breonna Parker, who is the founder of Black Millennial Cafe, a researcher, Barner researcher, does all the things, but does it in a Black context. And she responded to a question that I asked by saying, yes, we have to fight, but when are we going to start building? And so it is the frontline soldiers, which everybody doesn't even have the fortitude to be. Some, but even the frontline soldiers need to take a break and rest, replenish, and go build something, right? It is us thinking for ourselves, really tapping into ancestral wisdom. And I have to give him credit. I try not to quote a lot of other people, but Walter Brueggemann's prophetic imagination, right? How we, what God is calling us to build in this moment. What is our own role in building, maybe while fighting, but not fighting so much that we don't have enough energy or imagination left to build. I was sharing with you earlier about a recent trip to Rwanda, my first time in Rwanda. Folks sat under a tree, looked at an empty field that they didn't own, and imagined a hospital, their lives a hospital. Not only that, what I didn't share was they also sat under that tree and decided that they needed like an imagination lab. They call it the hall. The hall is a simple building that community members get to come into and think and imagine and see something other than what's in front of them. So I'm deeply invested in this season, and what is it that I might see? You know, we like to quote the line from The Color Purple, you know, all my life I had to fight. Baby, I'm tired of fighting. And there are ways in which all my life I really didn't have to, because I, because my parents did a set of fighting that at least in the early years, no. But I know, right? Like, what can we build? Like, do we only want to leave our progeny with exhaustion?
Right,
With a
right.
model of how to just work your mind, body, and soul to the bone? Or is there something, is there the materialization of hope and liberation that they can actually feel, touch, and draw some interest from?
Right,
So
right.
that's just kind of where I am now. I'm super excited about you all launching Black South. I've taken this moniker of pastor in the public square and launching an opportunity for folk to learn what it means to really be in the public square, and et cetera. And there are a number of places that I see people taking a little time to build. And so I want for our communities, not just for them to have good organizing skills, which I think actually matters. How might they use lessons we learned from Rwanda and take what they've learned about organizing and build something that benefits them that the empire can't touch?
Yes. Amen. Amen to that. Well, if you're leaving me speechless, Reverend Gold, honestly, it's powerful. I just want to like sit with that for a while. As you were talking too, I was thinking about how culture is almost designed to keep us from imagining, like keeping all the fires and all the stuff in front of us always like. We never have time to imagine something other than what they want to put in front of us. And I think that there's power in knowing that. And there's power in, like, our friends in Rwanda stepping away from that to create a space where they can think, dream, and imagine and do something. And that is just a powerful concept that I hope many of us continue to live out and, like you said, follow their example. And build something.
And simultaneously, so I'm sitting in front of one of this is my favorite African symbol, Sankofa, like my favorite of all the African symbols, right? The bird looking backwards but moving forward. Rwanda, they still are very present with the story of genocide. They go and they got multiple memorials, right? They took us to a church where folks should have been safe, but the faith leaders were complicit and helped the people get killed.
Wow.
It's 51,000 coffins at that, in like a glass mausoleum kind of thing. They still had the clothes from folk who were killed there on display in the church. So they have not disconnected themselves from the past. We do a lot of that. This ain't your mama's, your grandma's movement. Maybe it is, right? What can we learn from the past, right? What can we touch and see and remind ourselves of so that we can work to build something that is the antidote for the trauma of the past, right? I can't really get away from the trauma of it if I don't name what it is and even, acknowledge that it was there. And so I'm learning so much. Folk are like, girl, you just, you're on vacation in Africa, and I'm learning, I'm working, right? I'm not being a colonizer. It's not like I'm going to take them something. Every time I come back, I come back with more than the things I'm buying in my suitcase, right? But it is learning, and I want to, I'm asking God, help me to unlock my own imagination, right? Cole Arthur Riley, in her book This Here Flesh, talks about wonder, right? And I in this month, a part of my ongoing prayer is, God, I want to see the wonders of God, not just the mountaintops, right? But I want to find wonder in the mundane, and I want my mind to be able to wonder beyond the distractions that I'm seeing every day. How might I wonder enough? How might we be curious enough to actually ask the right questions, even of ourselves, of what does it take to get over this, you know?
Yes, that's wonderful. And thank you again, Reverend Dr. Cassandra Gold, for doing this and having this conversation. I would love for you to, one, if you have a Cash App, name it, because people should
Well.
pay Black. And also, if people want to find out more about you, your work, or reach out to you or collaborate with you, anything that you might invite them to check out or to follow or whatever.
Yeah, so I'm on probably I left Elon Musk alone. So I'm everywhere except on X. At Rev Dr. Gould, I'm pretty sure. So following me on social media is reach out or whatever is a good way. And if people are interested in my Cash App, I'm good with that. Dollar sign Rev Dr. C, REVDRC. Pretty simple. So I'm just really humbled again just to have this conversation, to engage with you and Kendall in his absence, and just about the work that you all are doing. I limit myself to coaching clients, as you know, because I want to be able to like go deep. And like I said, you are like model of coaching clients. So I'm gonna be opening up some space in March. I think I got like five slots that I'm gonna be looking to engage people. So if you have listeners that are interested in just some coaching, and you can you are my witness. You are one of the witnesses, just about the power of the life coaching. So.
Yes, and just to echo that, it is really powerful to, especially if you're listening to this and you're listening to Reverend Gold's words and they're resonating with you and you want mentorship and coaching, just take the step, because I am a living witness that it's powerful, it's impactful, and it's exactly what I needed to shift into this next phase of life, into building. I honestly, working with you opened up my imagination. You extended an invitation to imagine something new and different. And so I'm here to say her coaching is the bomb, the best. So yeah, so we just say thank you again. And with that, I'll be talking with you soon.
Thank you. And if you're interested, info at faithbeyondwalls.org. Info at faithbeyondwalls.org. If you don't want to do EM and do all of that. But I do eventually respond to DMs. It's just a long process. But thank you again, Reverend Aaron. You all just keep doing your good work, and blessings on all that you are doing.
Thank you. Thank you.